Can we really eat our way to better health? My guest today says that we can eat to beat disease, including cancer, dementia, and dozens of other avoidable diseases. Forget everything you know about your body and food and discover the new science of how does the body actually heal itself. In today's interview, we're going to learn how to identify strategies and dosages of food to transform resilience and health. The fact of it is, we have radically underestimated our body's own power to transform and restore back to health. My guest today is pioneering physician scientist Dr. William Lee, and he does research into over 200 health-boosting foods that can help to starve cancer, reduce your risk of dementia, and beat dozens of avoidable diseases. He wrote a book called Eat to Beat Disease, and it's not just about the foods to avoid, but it's a life-changing guide to the hundreds of healing foods that you can add to your meals that support your body's defense systems. If you grab a copy of this book, listen to this podcast, go and research all about Dr. William Lee, you will find out how to integrate foods that you already love into a diet or health plan that activates the total body health defense system, including angiogenesis, regeneration, the microbiome, DNA protection, and your immune system, allowing you to effectively fight cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, neurodegenerative disease, autoimmune diseases, and many other debilitating conditions. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. William W. Lee is an internationally renowned physician, scientist, and author of the New York Times bestseller, Eat to Beat Disease, the new science of how your body can heal itself. His groundbreaking work has led to the development of more than 30 new medical treatments and impacts care for more than 70 diseases, including cancer, diabetes, blindness, heart disease, and obesity. His TED Talk, Can We Eat to Starve Cancer, has garnered more than 11 million views. Dr. Lee has appeared on Good Morning America, CNN, CNBC, and The Dr. Oz Show, and has been featured in USA Today, Time Magazine, The Atlantic, and O Magazine. He is the president and medical director of the Angiogenesis Foundation and is leading research in COVID-19. Dr. William Lee, welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I'm super, super excited to talk to you because the very title of your book, Eat to Beat Disease, is something that I think so many people can get on board with. And yet, there is so much confusion and so much misinformation out there about what foods do we eat, which ones do we avoid, which ones can help to starve out cancers, reduce the risk of dementia, and avoid chronic disease. I love the very premise of the book that we are not destined to be riddled with disease our entire life. And so start us out with just the basics. Start us out with what is the role of food in our overall health?
Yeah, well, look, let me first start by saying that when I went to medical school, I'm a physician, an MD, I was taught about drugs. I was taught about disease. I was not taught about food, and I was not taught about health. But something I always wondered that actually gets to the question you asked, I always wondered, so how do you define health? right? So we know how to define cancer and cardiovascular disease and Alzheimer's, obesity, diabetes. But what is health? It's much more of an elusive kind of concept. So most people, myself included, many years ago would say, well, health is absence of disease. If I'm not sick, I must be well. And yet that was never really satisfying to me because the state that we want to be, what we want, health, if it's the absence of something else, it's very frustrating. You can't act on something that's the absence of something else, right? So the question is, how do you actually define what health is? And that's really what I spent the last decade, based on the previous two decades of my research, trying to figure out. How is it that, you know, like the question that doctors are trained to figure out is, why did you get disease X? Why did you get cancer? But I have a much more important question. The bigger question is, why don't we get sick more often? And the answer to that, why we don't get sick more often, is because we are hardwired at birth with self-defense systems, health defense systems that resist and repel the things that might make us sick. Everything from bacteria and viruses to cancers to diabetes and clogging of the arteries. We have all of those health defenses that were built when we were in our mom's womb. So when our chins, our ears, our hearts, our kidneys, our livers, our arms and our fingernails formed, so too were formed these health defense systems. And when we popped out of the womb, those health defenses were on full on, and they help us stay healthy, which is why most kids stay healthy. And so the issue about food is not about what is the superfood that will prevent, you know, disease, you know, from now and ever after. It's really more about, when it comes to food and health, it's not just about the food. A lot of it's about how our body responds to what we put inside it. And when we eat foods that activate our body's health defenses, we get stronger. When we eat something that takes our defenses down, we become more vulnerable. It's actually that simple.
Is it really? I mean, that seems so simple. Like when we eat a certain way, we build our body's defenses. And when we eat another way, we diminish our body's regenerative reserve in a way.
That's right. And it adds up over time. So what you do for dinner or lunch today might not feel that today. Okay. It's not like working out where you're going to feel the burn and then you'll be sore the next day. The bad decisions we make actually add up day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year, which is why, you know, a lot of these chronic diseases that, you know, everybody fears and yet contends with, it's a major burden to society, is really having to do with, you know, lifetime, decades of actually bad habits. So here's what I think is really great news, though. Our health defenses are firing on all cylinders until our very last breath. And so it's never too late to change your habit and develop a new habit. And that new habit is actually to activate your health defenses. And the best news is that the foods that can do that are actually foods that we actually like to eat. So they're not, it's not about avoiding food and deprivation. It's really about leaning into the foods, including many delicious foods, and trying to align the joy that foods can give us with the health that they can also deliver.
Okay, so break it down for us. What are foods that you think most people in general, you know, understanding that people respond to foods differently, but what are some of the foods that in general, you eat these foods, you're gonna beat disease?
Okay, so first, let me just tell you and tell your viewers what are the five health defense systems, because, you know, these defenses defend our body like a fortress. You ever see, like, go to see a castle or go to Disney and see the Disney castle? What do they have? They got the moat. They got the gate. They've got the sloping hills. They've got the little slits in the wall for the arrows to come out. Our body has health defenses. One of them is called angiogenesis. It builds our circulation. Our circulation are the highways and byways of health. They deliver oxygen that we breathe and nutrients that we eat to every cell in our body. Very important for health. Another health defense system, you used the word regenerative. It turns out that we have stem cells left over from when we developed. Those stem cells are called out over the course of our lives to repair, restore, and regenerate tissues, organs that we need from the inside out. We don't even see it. We don't feel it. Our gut health, microbiome is another health defense system. Our DNA is more than a genetic code. It protects us against harms from the environment, like ultraviolet radiation from the sky, like radon from the ground, like off-gassing from your furniture, or gasoline fumes at the pump. And finally, the fifth health defense system is our immune system, which in the last couple of years, we've realized is more important than ever before. We want to lower inflammation after we don't need it, and we want to raise our shields to have better defenses. Against those five health defenses, we can pick out foods that can activate them. A good one, as an example, that most people might resonate with green tea. So green tea isn't just sort of a magic drink. Green tea helps to prevent your blood vessels from feeding cancers. Green tea also helps coax out stem cells to help you heal. Green tea, particularly matcha tea, has the dietary fiber to help feed our gut microbiome, and our healthy gut bacteria pay us back by releasing substances that lower inflammation in our body. Green tea is an antioxidant, protects our DNA from damage, and green tea also helps to lower inflammation while supporting specific immune cells that we need to defend ourselves from invaders from the outside, like bacteria and viruses, and invaders from the inside, like microscopic cancers that we want to get rid of as well. So that's an example of one food that touches on all five health defenses.
I love it so much. I remember when I was doing my functional medicine training, one of my professors was like, forget putting water in your smoothie. Put green tea in the smoothie because it really doesn't have a ton of flavor, but it's adding so many of these powerful catechins and antioxidants and really just amazing ingredients that, as you said, support all five of our defense system. So what other foods? Okay, I'm waking up, I'm having my green tea, and then what else am I eating through the day?
I'll tell you what I had today. I had a kiwi, mm-hmm. All right? So the lowly kiwi, little fuzzy brown thing, slice it open, you get this beautiful emerald green in the middle, can also be golden, but not very sweet. But it's got vitamin C, ascorbic acid, which is good for lowering lower inflammation, good to support immunity, and it's also a good antioxidant. So here's something that you could easily slice and have a spoon and eat a whole kiwi in a few minutes. That's what I have. Now, I'll tell you what's interesting about kiwi. Research has been done to show that if you have one kiwi a day, an hour later, if you were to just draw out your blood and look at your blood cells, that one kiwi will have added enough antioxidant power into your bloodstream 1 hour later to protect it against DNA damage by 60%. So let's say that you actually had radiation or had chemical damage incoming, okay, to harm your DNA, which could mutate it, which could then cause all kinds of problems downstream. Just that one kiwi puts enough of these antioxidants in your bloodstream 1 hour later to defend your DNA against damage by 60%. You eat three kiwis? Okay. I don't know if I would eat three kiwis in one sitting, but this has been studied by researchers. You eat three kiwis. Now the power of the kiwi is to rebuild damaged DNA. So not really protecting against damage, now you're building it back. So how do you build back DNA? Well, look, DNA is kind of like a highway. When you have enough cars driving over it, you're going to get potholes. First little cracks, then it gets deeper and deeper. So fixing your DNA is actually about basically patching the road and filling those potholes. And that's what something as simple as a kiwi can do. Blueberries, I had some blueberries as well. Tea, kiwi, blueberries. That was my breakfast. The blueberries actually contain anthocyanin. This is actually a natural chemical that Mother Nature actually put into blueberries and many other dark colored foods like blackberries as well, for example, or purple potatoes. But in blueberries, which are not very sweet, the anthocyanins activate your immune defenses. And so you can actually support your immune system, your immune health, by having just that handful of blueberries every single day.
Is it really that simple? It's really that simple.
Well, life is never that simple, but I will tell you that it is as easy as listening to what I chose to have for breakfast today, to be able to have three foods, tea, a kiwi, and blueberries, a handful of blueberries, to be able to know that you've made a decision to activate your body's health defenses. Mm-hmm. And it tasted great too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we had Dr. Donna Mazzola on the podcast not too long ago, and she specializes in Hashimoto's. And she was saying, like, look, I need you to just eat 2 Brazil nuts a day. That's it, just 2 Brazil nuts. And what you're saying is, it's not that you got to sit and eat a gallon of blueberries every day. It's about having that intentional choice first thing in the morning. I'm going to drink my green tea, I'm going to eat a kiwi, and I'm going to eat a handful or 2 of blueberries, and just make it simple.
And your good deeds for your body will add up over time. Mm-hmm. And so more isn't necessarily more. So eating a handful of blueberries or 2 Brazil nuts might be really great for you because you enjoy eating them. They're very manageable. They don't cost too much money, and anybody can do it. But that does not mean, and I think this is a really important thing to underscore for your listeners, that doesn't mean that you should be eating a gallon of blueberries every day or a bucketful of Brazil nuts. You know, this idea that we sometimes have, if a little is good, more must be better. And now let's just giant size it, must be great, isn't true when it comes to the body. Our body actually works within a, what we call a homeostatic set point. It's kind of like that perfect zone, like Goldilocks, I call it the Goldilocks zone. Not too hot, not too cold, not too hard, not too soft, but just right. Most of our health defenses function within that zone where if we eat just some food, reasonable amounts, we will get all of our defenses to be working right where we need them. Do not try to go to extremes. And I think this is the other thing that I think might be helpful that I've learned over the years with my research is that extremes rarely pay off for the long run. And that's definitely true when it comes to food.
Well, they're certainly not sustainable. You know, they're just simply not sustainable. If it's absurd to think that, okay, I'm going to eat like a half a gallon of blueberries every single day from now until the end of all time. Talk about boring. Talk about potential GI upset. Talk about fructose overload. You know, we're talking about how these are not very sweet, but you eat too many of them, you start to get that fructose overload, which we discussed on the podcast with Dr. Richard Johnson about just how much fructose impacts our cardiovascular system. And so I agree with you that don't go to the extreme, simply allow the good deeds to add up over time. Now, you mentioned earlier about the gut, and I'd love to get a deep dive from you about how does our gut health interact with our immune system? How does the gut interact with the brain? And how is the gut important for our overall picture of health?
Yeah, okay. So, you know, gut health is a popular term, popular concept, and rightfully so. Our gut contains bacteria, about 39 trillion bacteria. We're only made of 40 trillion cells, and we've got 39 trillion bacteria. Most of it lives in our gut. So we're 50-50 human, and the other 50% of us that we walk around with is bacteria. And when I was in medical school, one of the things that we were taught by our professors when we were in the first year is to say, we're not going to learn about bacteria. And then I'm going to tell you why you need to kill that bacteria. Then I'm going to tell you about the drug you need to prescribe to kill that bacteria. All right. Mm-hmm. And that really became the mantra for learning about bacteria in the body. And it turns out now we know that that's just completely ass backwards. Most of the bacteria in our body is helpful. Very few bacteria that live in our body are overtly harmful. We don't want to actually destroy the bathwater to get that one little bug, that little fly that lands into the water. So here's what we know. The gut bacteria, this ecosystem that lives inside our gut, is like the Great Barrier Reef. It's got lots of organisms. They're beautiful. They function together. When there's lots of them, lots of diverse different life forms in there, they make it even more beautiful. They collaborate together, okay? And they live in harmony. And we know that they need to eat. and we feed them. So as humans, we provide room and board for our healthy gut bacteria. They live in our colon, okay? When we eat, the human parts of our system absorb all the nutrients from our food. And then anything that we haven't absorbed goes on, like dietary fiber, soluble fiber, goes down and it feeds the gut. They get happy and they pay us back by releasing these things called short chain fatty acids right into our bloodstream that lower our inflammation, they right size our metabolism. And what's interesting is the gut, when they're well fed and happy, they basically signal to our brain. And this is, to me, one of the most awesome discoveries about gut-brain health, is that the gut can send signals to the brain. It's like they text message your brain. Mm-hmm. And there's a gigantic nerve, one of the biggest nerves in your body, called the vagus nerve. It runs, one of the cranial nerves, runs from your brain all the way down to your gut. And it's about the kind of like, it looks like a shoelace. Okay. It's about that thick.
It's huge.
Huge. And basically the text message runs along that channel up to your brain. And when the gut bacteria send those healthy signals, your brain releases things like serotonin, dopamine, GABA. It also releases something called oxytocin. Now, oxytocin is a social hormone. It is the hormone that your brain releases when you see a friend, a good friend, and you give them a hug. It's a thing your brain releases when you get a kiss. It's also the same hormone that gets released when you actually have an orgasm. Okay. And so this is actually a happy hormone that actually gets released, and your gut bacteria is responsible for that. What a powerful interaction that is. We also know that when you have problems with your gut bacteria, when the ecosystem is damaged, when the Great Barrier Reef is disturbed and the life in it is dying off, bleaching, okay? And this is something we call in the gut dysbiosis. A lot of us are walking around with dysbiotic guts because lots of things can damage our gut bacteria, like artificial sweeteners, like ultra processed foods, overeating sugar, overloading on sugar can also disturb our gut bacteria. What happens is that when that ecosystem is disturbed, all of a sudden, all the signals that are sent in your body are screwed up. Inflammation rises, your metabolism goes out of whack, the messages to your brain are not sent in the right way. And in fact, diseases like schizophrenia, depression, even autism have been linked to disturbances in the gut bacteria. So I did research, by the way, to look at healthy gut bacteria and wound healing. So you would think that if you or I cut ourselves, scraped our knee on a bike, fell off a bike or whatever, paper cut, you know, we're healthy people. Our wound should heal as fast as it needs to heal. But here's the amazing thing. If you feed your gut bacteria the right way, you can, what we found by research, I did some research at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, you can actually double the rate of wound healing. So think about the Wolverine getting injured and healing like that. That's actually something that our gut bacteria can actually help to control, how fast we actually heal. That's how powerful the gut bacteria is. And I'll tell you one additional little piece of information that was just published 2 weeks ago, about 2 months ago, in the journal Nature Medicine. A group of researchers from the MD Anderson Cancer Center, one of the most prestigious cancer centers in the world, working with the National Institutes of Health, looked at 200 cancer patients who had malignant melanoma, deadly form of skin cancer. And these patients were all getting a very advanced treatment called immunotherapy. Now, immunotherapy is one of the most natural kinds of cancer treatments you can have, not chemo. What it does is it actually just prompts your own immune system, your own health defenses, to go and wipe out the cancer. The problem is, in general, only about 20% of people respond the way that we want them to respond. And when they do, like, you can completely erase the cancer, even if it's spread to your brain, kind of like a dry erase board. You can just, your immune system will wipe it away. I never thought I'd see anything like that in my career. And here we are seeing it happen all the time. But 80% of the people don't respond the way that you want them to respond. So these researchers published, they looked at the responders and non-responders and found that the responders had one bacteria in their gut that the non-responders did not have. It's called ruminococcus. And then they asked people what they were eating. And they found that the people who had the ruminococcus bacteria associated with having an immune response to wipe out cancer, they were also eating dietary fiber, more dietary fiber. In fact, in this study, they calculated how much dietary fiber you need to eat. And here's what they found. for every 5 grams of dietary fiber that these patients were eating, it decreased the risk of their cancer growing and mortality, dying from their cancer by 30%. That's a lot. Now, how much is 5 grams of dietary fiber? It's the amount you'd have in a single medium-sized pear. Not a lot to ask. Very reasonable amount to have. And so that's another example of how that dietary fiber feeds a gut bacteria, communicates with your immune system. Oh, forgot to tell you, 70% of our immune system is actually located in the wall of the gut. That's how our gut bacteria talk to our immune system. Not only do they text message to our brain, they pound through the freshman dorm thin wall of the intestines over to their immune system and basically talks to them and tells them what to actually order for dinner that night. If you remember freshman year, that's basically how people, roommates talk to each other sometimes. So it's quite remarkable how important our gut bacteria is. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
It is just, it's just beginning to get started. This is one of my special passions, is understanding how do you engineer your microbiome? Because, you know, we talked to Bill Davis on the show about, like, there are certain bacteria that will eat small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and it doesn't make sense in your mind. You're like, wait, I'm going to use one bacteria to eat another bacteria to help you. Yes. And you can look at specific studies about ADHD, which gut bacteria are altered, which gut bacteria are altered in schizophrenia. Parkinson's disease is another soapbox that I get on all the time, because I just don't think people know that if you are getting diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, the odds are like 9.5 out of 10 that you have suffered for 20 years of chronic constipation because your gut bacteria is not working well. And, you know, in our functional medicine training, fiber is the key not only for healthy digestion, but it is one of the absolute most critical dietary foods that we can eat that helps to prevent autoimmune conditions, because it literally helps to, it almost acts like a mop, just like mopping up inflammation all throughout the body. And I'm sitting here with my smoothie right now, got my 6 grams of fiber in there. And so if you can't get a pear, make a smoothie, do something that is going to be one of those good deeds that adds up over time. Now, I love, you know, one other thing before I move on, short chain fatty acids that you mentioned a moment ago. There are medications, as a pharmacist, I'm always here and I want to teach people about medications. There are medications that disrupt the production of short chain fatty acids and other postbiotics. And one of them is the most common drug prescribed in the United States, and it's called metformin. And metformin disrupts our short chain fatty acids and actually makes the metformin less effective. And it can lead to escalating doses of metformin where you're not able to get that glucose lowering that you're aiming for, simply because the metformin is disrupting your gut bacteria. The gut bacteria are producing short chain fatty acids that literally cannibalize the drug, because the drugs are xenobiotics. They are foreign substances that all of these defense systems are saying, hey, that's not me. We need to get rid of that. And so my next question, you know, with me being so, I'm a real big advocate of like the gut-brain axis and taking care of your gut. You know, I've mentioned prebiotics, I've mentioned probiotic foods, but tell me some of your favorite foods for improving gut health and maybe some that might even surprise us a little bit.
Yeah, well, one of the foods that I actually enjoy having fruit for breakfast. I find it's seasonal, fresh, usually a pick-me-up in the morning, and it's light, which is what I like when I have breakfast. So, you know, I mentioned the kiwi, which I actually really enjoy eating, and that's definitely good for, it's got a lot of dietary fiber, that's actually good for the gut. Green tea, we also talked about. Coffee is also good for the gut microbiome.
A lot of people are going to be really happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, coffee has chlorogenic acid, among many other bioactives. And chlorogenic acid actually activates all five of your body's health defense systems, including the gut microbiome. It's healthy for that. Now, here's a little tip about coffee. I used to live in Italy, and when I was there, I picked up this sort of espresso drinking habit. So I like to have a little espresso in the morning. And I always wondered, you know, what type of coffee bean could give me the most? Now, you know, back in the day, it might have been the biggest jolt of caffeine. But now I'm actually thinking well, what's the healthiest? Which one's got more chlorogenic acid? And it turns out I learned something in the last few years. I used to be very skeptical about the idea of organic foods, mostly because I kind of felt a little outraged to have to pay more money for something that has less harmful material like pesticides. Mm-hmm. And it turns out I learned something different from horticulturalists in the last couple of years. What I learned is that many of these bioactives, like chlorogenic acid in coffee beans or ellagic acid in strawberries, okay, these are all bioactives, they are natural insecticides that repel bugs that might be nibbling on their stems and leaves. And so in the wild, where there isn't normally pesticides, you know, in the summertime when these things are growing, bugs are nibbling on their leaves and stems, and the coffee plant makes more bioactive, more chlorogenic acid in response to the injury, the little nibbling that's going on. So organic coffee has 30% more chlorogenic acid. I didn't realize that. And strawberries, organic strawberries have much more ellagic acid. And now all of a sudden I have a different perspective, because it makes sense to me that, you know, that Mother Nature would design a system that would repel insects naturally. And by creating more of these chemicals that would help the plant, it'd be something that might be beneficial for humans as well. That makes me think differently, because now I might be willing to look for a product that gives me more of what I would want.
It's so true. I mean, if we would just let nature be nature and play itself out instead of spraying the plants with poison. You know, I just was talking earlier today about one of the problems with Big Pharma is they have so much money that there's nothing that you can do that's going to make them go like, boo-hoo, woe is us. And so, you know, you look at Bayer, who owns Monsanto. They recently paid $11 billion in criminal and civil fees because Roundup has been shown now to directly cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so we're ingesting glyphosate on these foods, but we can also take a different perspective. And I love the perspective shift that you just mentioned, which is like, I'm not buying this food because it has an absence of glyphosate or DEET or whatever chemicals that it has been sprayed with. I'm buying this food because it number one, respects the process that it takes to get the food, and it allows nature to run its course. And I love that. The chlorogenic acid, everybody, you heard it here. This is the first time I've heard of chlorogenic acid, although ellagic acid is one of those buzzwords these days. I think a lot of people have heard all about it. Before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors. This episode of The Lindsay Elmore Show is sponsored by Sambucol. Fall will soon be here. And fall is a time when we get the chance to harvest all that we have sown all summer long. Mother Nature is shedding her layers as we layer up for cooler weather. Kids are heading back to school, and this is a time of transition. That means that it is the perfect time of year to assess your current routines. What is serving you? What isn't? And is there anything that can help to aid your health and wellness journey? This is where Sambucol comes in. I recently started taking Sambucol Black Elderberry every single morning to help support my immune system so that I can keep doing all of the things that I need to do every single day. It's a simple act of self-care that doesn't really take much effort. Sambucol is made from premium European black elderberries, which are a natural source of powerful antioxidants and key vitamins like A, C, and E. They help support a healthy immune system so that you can keep moving. Best of all, Sambucol has many different ways of helping your daily dose of black elderberry to happen with ease. There are syrups, gummies, chewable tablets, drink powders, capsules, and more. They have products just for kids, too. So whether you are drizzling a little bit of syrup over your yogurt or overnight oats, or if you're reminded every time you exercise, today is my time to take my Sambucol, go ahead and bump up that immunity so that you can keep moving. Listeners of the Lindsay Elmore Show can get 15% off of their next order of $9.99 or more at SambucolUSA.com by using my promo code Lindsay15 at checkout. That's 15% off your order of $9.99 or more at SambucolUSA.com when you shop the code LINDSEY and the number 15 at checkout. Here's a pro tip. Save this information in your notes app. Life gets busy and you are not going to want to scroll back through episodes and find me saying this again. The code is Lindsay15 at SambucolUSA.com. And now, let's get back to the show. Talk to us more about, you know, cancer is such a scary topic. And you did a TED Talk called Can We Eat to Starve Cancer? So what do we eat to starve out the cancer? You know, you already mentioned that green tea is going to prevent that angiogenesis of going to these perturbed cells that are dividing too rapidly. But what else can people do throughout their lifetime that's going to help to prevent cancers?
Well, our health defense systems actually are superbly trained to fight off and prevent cancers from ever becoming dangerous. And I say that very purposefully because most people don't know that we all develop cancers, microscopic cancers in our bodies all the time.
Yep.
And here's the deal. We are humans made of 40 trillion cells. That's a lot of cells. And those cells have to divide so that why we're here around tomorrow. Today, how do we do this? The cells copy-paste themselves, so there's more of us tomorrow, and when they copy themselves, if they make mistakes, that's a mutation. And that mutation, if they accumulate one or two mutations, can become a little microscopic cancer. That's an abnormal cell that's divided, and it accumulates these mutations. And that's how really we think about a cancer. This happens whenever the mistakes occur in your body. You know how many mistakes occur in your body and with your DNA? 10,000 mistakes occur every single day on average in the human body. That's a lot of mistakes. And so the question is, how come we don't develop big honking cancers every single day? Well, it's because our body's health defenses occur. And if these little tiny mistakes turn into microscopic cancers, what happens? They cannot grow larger than the tip of a ballpoint pen. That's like the size of a pimple, a small pimple, because they don't have a blood supply. Like any other organ, if you don't have a blood supply, you can't get bigger, right? And so that's part of your angiogenesis defenses. And what I talked about during my TED Talk is from all the work in biotech that I've done, developing new biopharmaceuticals aim to cut off the blood supply to tumors. Very sophisticated. There's over a dozen of them. I've been involved with every single one. And they're, you know, kind of like game changers for cancer treatment. The reality is, they're expensive, they got side effects, not everybody can get them. And there's another solution, which is that the foods that we eat and the bioactives they contain, when we eat them, can actually support our body's angiogenesis defense system, which by itself cuts off the blood supply so that tumors can't be fed. So we can eat literally to starve cancer. Now, how do we know that's true? You know, like when people always talk about that stuff, and I hear them talking about it, I say, all right, show me the evidence. Tell me how that's true. How do you know that's true? Well, there's been a number of studies looking at this. Tomatoes, for example, can have a bioactive called lycopene in it. The lycopene in a tomato that you pick off a vine actually is not very well absorbed in the body because of its chemical structure. But when you actually heat it gently and simmer your tomato, that heat on the stovetop will change the chemical form to a form you can absorb. So it's called cis to trans. You swallow it. If you're a chemist, you'll actually understand exactly what I'm talking about. And then your body can absorb that form that's been heated much, much better. Now, because lycopene is also fat soluble, meaning it's a natural chemical that tends not to dissolve in water, it dissolves in fat better. If you simmer your tomatoes with a little bit of olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, now when you eat your tomato sauce, now the lycopene will be much more readily absorbed into your body after you eat it. So what did I talk about? I talked about making red sauce, more or less. And this has been shown to have a human impact. The lycopene inhibits angiogenesis. It stops cancers from being able to develop a blood supply. It starves cancer. So this study of 30,000 people it's a health professionals follow-up study, studied 30,000 men. And they found that those men who ate 2 to 3 servings of cooked tomatoes per week, 2 to 3 servings of cooked tomatoes a week, how much each time? 1/2 cup. Not very much. In fact, if I only gave you 1/2 cup of tomato sauce on your pasta, you'd probably ask for a little bit more. Okay, so all readily attainable. That's another theme we're talking about. These are not ridiculous amounts. 2 to 3 cups, 1/2 cup, 2 to 3 servings, 1/2 cup each time, actually was found to lower the risk of prostate cancer in men by 29%. 29%. That means that that's pretty remarkable for dietary intake, but that means some men did develop prostate cancer. And when you did the biopsy and looked under the microscope in the hospital at those prostate cancers, it was found that those men who ate more servings of cooked tomatoes a week, 4 servings a week, 5 servings a week, had less aggressive prostate cancers, fewer blood vessels feeding those prostate cancers. So tomato sauce, lycopene, has an anti-angiogenic effect. So that's an example of how a food can actually starve cancer. Now, by the way, we're talking about Mother Nature. Turns out that not all tomatoes were created equal. They all have got some lycopene, but actually the San Marzano tomato, which comes from Italy originally, and this is whether it's fresh and you can grow it in your backyard now from seeds, whether it's fresh, whether it's canned, whether it comes in paste or comes in a tube, that all contain lots, the highest concentration of lycopene of other compared to other tomatoes. So that's a little practical tip. Like in the summertime, when I go to the farmer's market and I see all these kinds of tomatoes, I know which ones I can cook with better. I know which ones will be better in a garden salad. But now I'm telling your listeners this, now you can choose one that's also exceptional for your health and look for the San Marzano tomato.
So what about, okay, I have so many questions going through my head right now because, you know, for some people, we get the advice of like, oh, you have acid reflux, stay away from those tomatoes. And yet here we see great benefit. And in traditional Chinese medicine, the inability to digest healthy foods is a symptom. It's not an actual disease. And I've gotten into huge debates with peeps. You know, certainly there is a huge anti-gluten movement out there. Traditional Chinese medicine says, look, if you can't process gluten, that's a symptom. And there's also tons of people that are like plant-based, you know, never meat. And it's like, well, no, if you can't process all of the meat, that may be a symptom. So are there any foods in your mind that you go, absolutely not, this is not something that I eat? And if I do eat it, I eat it with the understanding that I know this piece of candy is not good for me. I know this like high sugar, rancid fat deliciousness that I'm picking up from the processed food aisle is not healthy. But where do you come down on some of the more controversial, you know, gluten, nightshades, lectins, all the like, is it dangerous? Is it not?
So look, I'm a scientist as well as a doctor. The doctor is always about trying to figure out what's in the best interest of the patient, of the person. And the scientist is, you know, where does the truth lie? What do we know about a statement, a claim, a proposal of something? And, you know, the science basically will reveal what the truth actually is. And so, you know, let's address a couple of those things. Look, gluten is very irritating to some people, even if they don't have actual celiac disease, which is a severe autoimmune response against gluten. Some people are just really irritated by gluten. It causes their digestion to be, it causes digestive symptoms as well. But I agree with you. That's not the disease. That's the symptom of something else. Could it be an overactive immune system? Could it be leaky gut because your bacteria aren't healthy? And so if you actually had a more intact membrane around your intestines, imagine a garden hose like your intestines, and it was leaking. You just popped lots of holes in it, and then you try to water the lawn. You're not going to get a big, strong stream out. You're going to have stuff leaking out all over the place. Imagine what was leaking out was bacteria. Now you're going to be really irritated in your gut. And that's, again, not just talking about gluten. Now we're talking about irritable bowel syndrome. And so how do we get back to the root cause? And I think that's really what you're talking about. A lot of the traditional Chinese medicine really tries to look at root causes. And what I would say is this, always look for that root cause. If you've got too much inflammation, figure out how you can actually lower the inflammation. If you've got an overactive immunity, try to figure out why that might be and how you can actually calm or quell that. Our food system actually contains clues to actually how to do that. It takes a little patience to think through it. And I think that, again, another issue is that we're looking for quick fixes. Just give me the pill that can actually make it all go away. No, I think that if we get to know ourselves a little bit more and take the time, we can usually try to suss out what are some of these root causes. Now I want to address something you said that, you know, is just frankly, unfortunately, just not true. So do you know about the whole background of the whole tomato and nightshade lectin story?
I cannot wait to hear this. I do not know the background on how nightshades got so vilified.
Okay. Well, so tomatoes are a fruit, first of all, and they actually grew first in Latin America and South America. And when the Spaniards were exploring South America, Latin America.
Exploring, a loose term, exploring. Okay, all right, sorry.
I'm talking about the exploratory part of it.
Yes.
There's many other things they did that were not so kosher. But when they would often bring back to Europe these weird looking fruits with a little vine with leaves on it that nobody in Europe had actually seen before. And in fact, the original tomatoes were not red. They were golden yellow, mm-hmm. Okay? And that's why they call it palm apple d'oro of gold. It looked like a golden apple. That's mm-hmm. how pomodoro, which is the word, Italian word for tomato, actually mm-hmm. was named because it wasn't red. Later on, they bred it and it looked redder and redder. And now you've got the classic tomato we see in a grocery store. Now, when they brought it back, nobody had seen any plant like this before. It wasn't growing in Europe. So they sent a couple of snippets and leaves up and drawings up to England to Linnaeus, who was one of these big taxonomists. You probably have some memories of taxonomy.
I do, just a few.
Where they had to figure out like what's related to what. You know, it's like taxonomy is kind of like trying to figure out like your Facebook group and how many, or Kevin Bacon, how many degrees of separation are you from any one other person? It can be kind of a nightmare. And in fact, it was when they sent tomatoes up there, they couldn't pin it to anything, but the leaves kind of looked nightshade-y. Okay. And so they classified it. It's kind of like a nightshade. It's not exact, but that's close enough. And that's how the nightshade association. Now toxicity. So the people who got these wonderful, strange gifts from the conquistadors or whatever in South America, they were the wealthy class. They deserved the gifts. So they would use them not as food, but as home decor. They put their tomatoes on these leaded furniture trays, and the acid in the tomato absorbed the lead out of the tray. And when they ate it, they get lead poisoning. And that's really the link between tomatoes and toxicity. And that's the link between tomatoes and nightshade. Now, fast forward, I can tell you. So basically the wealthy threw out the tomatoes. We don't want this, it's poison. And guess who picked it up? The peasants. The peasants picked it up. We can grow these, we can cook these. And that's why so much of the tomato sauce you see really is peasant food. It's really just ordinary people's food. Now we kind of elevate it to something fancier, but actually it was very simple food before. Now, one of the other interesting things that you might not know is that tomatoes do have lectin, but by the way, so do you and I. Our human cells have a ton of lectin in them, and so do many foods. In fact, there are hundreds of lectins out there. And yes, there are some lectins that are deadly poisons. It just so happens they don't happen to be in a tomato. And that's not what made the tomato poisonous back in the day when the wealthy people were getting toxic from the lead that came off the tray. And it's not linked, it's not because that the tomato was closely allied to the nightshade leaf pattern in England either. So again, sometimes you need to step back and you need to say, where did this fairy tale come from?
Mm-hmm. I know. There's so many stories that once you hear the origin story of how this concept of health and wellness came to be, that you're just like, well, that doesn't apply anymore. It's not a modern story to tell anymore. And so that is absolutely fascinating. So here's the lesson we've learned, everybody. Don't store your tomatoes on lead trays if you don't want them to have lead poisoning.
But the positive part is that if you're going to cook your tomatoes, cook in an extra virgin olive oil, because then you'll get more of the lycopene that your body can absorb. So I think that, you know, like it is so true. Most of these urban legends, by the way, Lindsay, come from people that are well-intentioned. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that this isn't deliberate misinformation. It's just sort of like the urban legend that kind of got created. And it turns out there's no boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, humans are genuinely designed to eat real food. And, you know, it's one of the things that kind of, I see social media influencers and they're like, kale's trying to kill you, spinach is trying to kill you. And I'm like, is it really those oxalates in that spinach are trying to take me out? I don't think so. But it does make great social media content, no doubt. Before I let you go, I would love to talk more about your role as the president and medical director of the Angiogenesis Foundation and what you are researching about COVID-19. Are there foods that can help to build our immune resilience? I've said since the very beginning of the pandemic, I just thought, God, what a missed opportunity. We could have easily gone on TV and been like, hey guys, you know what we're always telling you about healthy body weights and getting good exercise and learning how to deep breathe and like eating phytonutrients? We're going to actually need you to do that now. Like, this is going to be really important. So what has your research revealed about not just COVID, but overall immune resilience and our diet?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. In March of 2020, when I was locked in my house like every other human on the planet, 8 billion people, and here I am, a doctor, pretty well trained, research background, connected to lots of medical institutions. And I realized that this was a new human disease that I had no knowledge, nor had any medical establishment had any knowledge. There's no pharmaceutical company with a solution, no hospital with a solution, no doctor with a solution. And we were all basically reduced to who we ultimately are, humans. And what I realized that the one thing that we all had to do was eat food. And that gave me kind of a sense of mission, that like this idea of eating to beat disease. If there were, I love what you just said about like, you know, could we have all gotten on television? You know, the new Center for Disease Control needs to be able to say what you just said. Like, let's move, let's sleep, let's stress less, let's eat better, let's eat whole foods, let's take care of our bodies, let's follow our own human instincts of what we were designed to do. And so that's why I started to create these masterclasses that I started giving for free around, that started to reach people around the world. Like, I've had 8,000 people from 44 countries join in to hear, what do we need to know about how we can build our immunity as an example? So what are some of the things we learned? Right. So at the beginning of the pandemic, there were studies that were looking at the gut microbiome. They were looking at diet. And obviously, there were all these connections between people who actually were more severely affected by COVID, people with diabetes, people who are overweight, people who are elderly. But one study was really interesting. They looked at people who hadn't gotten COVID and then followed them, drew their blood, looked at their poop for the microbiome, and followed and asked what they ate. And they followed them to see who would develop COVID and who wouldn't. And it turns out the people who weren't developing COVID had more of a cytokine called interferon gamma, which is a natural virus killer. And they found that those people had more of a couple of bacteria in their gut, one called ruminococcus, the other one called lactobacillus. And they found that those people were eating more omega-3 containing foods, as well as drinking green and black tea. And so there started to be, from the very beginning of the pandemic, an interest in looking at what type of food interventions could be useful to think about. Now, you know, we started talking about immunity, and obviously, you know, having a good healthy gut microbiome will help to support immunity. Cutting down or cutting out excessive added sugar, ultra processed foods definitely unpacks our health in terms of our gut microbiome and makes our immune system stronger, because our gut bacteria talk to our immune system. But it turns out that other foods started to look like they could be helpful as well. One food that was an interesting research project looked at broccoli sprouts, and they found that broccoli sprouts in combination with vaccines, in this case it was a flu vaccine, not a COVID vaccine, could actually improve your immune system's response to the vaccine by 22 times, which is really powerful. And this is just for a flu vaccine. And so we knew that leafy greens, plant-based foods were actually going to be something that could be useful as well. We talked about fruits like blueberries that could be also helpful for immunity. And so we started to think through how do we even go further to look for foods that might specifically interfere with the virus. And so this is not saying that foods can treat or cure COVID, but I will tell you that green tea, the catechin in green tea, has been shown to interfere with the virus binding to human cells. That seaweed from wakame, which is the dark piece of seaweed in your miso soup at a Japanese restaurant, it's an edible seaweed that has a polysaccharide that's naturally found in the seaweed that interferes with the binding of the virus to human cells. And so, like anything else in medicine, you know, we may be discovering the future treatments for COVID looking at natural sources, just like for cancer and headaches and other things. A lot of those things originally came from Mother Nature. So I think that, you know, this pandemic made us realize that we do need to eat healthier, to be healthier, to be more resistant. And my work in COVID research has been to take a look at how the coronavirus not just gets into your lungs and causes a respiratory illness, but it gets into your blood vessels and damages your blood vessels. So that wound up being an article in the New York Times, in a New England Journal of Medicine. And what we now realize is that it's really important to eat foods that can help to protect your blood vessels. If they're damaged, if you've recovered from COVID, probably eating the same foods that are going to be heart healthy are going to protect your blood vessels as well. So, you know, this was sort of like a nightmarish episode that we had in our human history, collective history, to really just call into clear focus that the things that we've been talking about all along, eating whole foods, mostly plant-based, eating seafoods, making sure that we're doing the right things to our body and not overloading on those things that we know are not that good for us. That's actually how we need to navigate to a healthier future.
Oh, I love it so much. We truly can eat to beat disease. And that includes the common diseases, diabetes and heart disease, and it also includes infectious disease. And you can even eat to starve out the cancer. Listeners, please go pick up a copy of Eat to Beat Disease. Go and download Dr. Lee's TED Talk, Can We Eat to Starve Cancer? And go and check out his work at www.dr, that's Dr. William Lee, that's li.com. And please do share this episode with a friend who would also like to eat to beat disease. Dr. William Lee, thank you so very much. It has been such an honor to talk with you today on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you, Lindsay.
If you have been struggling with poor immune system functioning, gastrointestinal issues like bloating and constipation and gas, or maybe even something as bad as celiac disease, Crohn's disease, or ulcerative colitis. Maybe you just have these skin flares of acne and eczema that come out of nowhere. Allergies, hay fever, maybe even just brain fog and chronic fatigue and insomnia, or maybe even vitamin and mineral deficiencies. You may be feeling the effects of a microbiome dysbiosis. Dysbiosis is when our microbiome, the germs, bacteria, viruses, parasites, as well as yeasts and fungus that are living on us and in us, become disrupted. We disrupt our microbiome by lacking nutrients and fiber in our diet, lack of exercise, not getting enough sleep, having too much anxiety, the use of many medications and antibiotics, prolonged time spent indoors in contact with man-made materials and surfaces disrupts our microbiome. And if we've had a recent infection from pathogenic microbes, that can also turn into a disruption in our microbiome. Genetic factors, as well as overexposure to toxic household cleaning products, agricultural pesticides and herbicides, and cosmetic products not designed with your microbiome in mind, can lead to all manner of symptoms. That's why I decided to host the Engineering the Microbiome Summit. From September 26th until October the 2nd, you can tune in live and for free to the Engineering Your Microbiome Summit, where I have interviews with more than 40 industry experts. We're talking physicians, nurses, chiropractors, nutritionists, all that help us to engineer a healthy microbiome that can prevent and reverse both physical and mental illness. Head to lindsayelmore.com/microbiome to save the date and get signed up for the Engineering Your Microbiome Summit. That's lindsayelmore.com/microbiome to sign up today. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support The Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag @Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.